Welcome back to the Breaking Through podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Aaron, and I'm here again with my wife, Kelly, who's joining me in another conversation. And this week, I wanted to talk about chores, essentially, is engaging with our kind of day-to-day essential tasks, which I find for myself and for others often kind of bog us down. And I wanted to figure out why we do that and come up with some strategies to make this essential part of our life more effective and better. And I think a place I wanted to start was thinking about an old story around enlightenment. It comes from the Zen Buddhist tradition. And essentially says, before I was enlightened, I used to get up in the morning and chop wood and carry water. And then I went through a whole process of meditation and spiritual practice, and I became enlightened. And then once I was enlightened, I would then get up in the morning and chop wood and carry water. And the simple story actually has a number of really important insights to it. The first one is recognizing what enlightenment is. That enlightenment is really a state of awareness, a state of mind, a state of consciousness. It's not about what you're doing. It's about how you're doing it. And the second insight from the story is that ultimately, whatever enlightenment is, or whatever we're aiming to do, needs to get integrated into our day-to-day life. It can't be something separate that exists within a monastery or within a yoga class, but something that begins to integrate and infiltrate into our day-to-day affairs and state of mind. In fact, you know, the idea of religion is a fundamentally Western one. When Western anthropologists began to go do field work with traditional nomadic societies, and they were trying to get the word for spirituality out of them, the nomads would look at them with a really quizzical look, because there was no word for spirituality. That what we think of as religion as some kind of separate domain of human experience was understood to be so part and parcel of everyday life that there literally wasn't a word or concept for its separateness.
That's really cool. Also, this is the perfect segue from your last podcast, which was Meditation Doesn't Exist. Because, you know, that idea of meditation shouldn't just be when you're on the mat, it should be all day. And now taking it into, okay, but can it be during the part of your day when you're doing chores? I like that. It's like another level.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think there are a couple of real reasons for it, and there's a real value to the mundane. And I think we're living in a time of real attempted convenience where we can automate as much as we can so that we can optimize our attention in certain ways.
Take away all the mundane.
Yeah, but I think a third insight from that chop wood and carry water story is that it has always been a little bit challenging in these kind of mundane states where we tend to go into autopilot to maintain your presence and your attention doing it. And so one of the values of these types of activities becomes, one, a testing ground to see how effectively your attention can be maintained, and becomes a type of activity because of the nature of its challenge to stay engaged with, really becomes an incredible opportunity for doing it. There's a lot, you know, the idea of mindfulness has become a catchphrase term at the moment, and this idea underpinning it is simply being attentive in every moment to what you're doing in day-to-day tasks. And it is one of those things that sound really, really easy to do, but if you take it seriously and you observe yourself in your operational state, it's very hard to do it. And part of the reason we're honing in on this subset of human experience today is I think there's a reason why, particularly at this moment in our time and space, culturally and socially, why it's particularly hard. what's required for mindfulness to be present, an unspoken aspect of it, is to value what you're doing. If you do not fundamentally value what you're doing, then there's no way to really be present. Because at least a subconscious level, and certainly to an extent your conscious level, your attention feels like is drawing you to doing something else you should be doing.
Yeah.
And so if you are going to hold your attention in relation to what you're actually doing, you must value what you're doing to do that.
Yeah, and our society does not tell us to value washing the dishes.
Exactly. You know, and I think...
which is something we, most of us all have to do, you know, 3 or 4 times a day. And yet, societally, we're told, like, this is... ideally, you'd be doing something else.
Exactly. You know, I think there are kind of 3 phases to every process and everything. Everything in existence has 3 phases to it. The first phase is creation, is coming into being. The second phase is maintenance, is maintaining the organization of what came into being. And the third phase is reorganization, or disillusion, is the kind of coming undone of what came into being so that those constituent elements can turn into something else. And this is a cycle of being: creation, maintenance, disillusion, and then
destruction.
Within Hindu philosophy, this is expressed between the 3 primary deities, the triumvirate in Hindu philosophy: Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Brahma is the representation, the archetype of creation. Vishnu represents the deity that holds things in place and maintains them. And Shiva is the destroyer, that which destroys things and brings them into a new form. And a key word in whatever we're doing, in every phase, whether it's physically, in your body, mentally, socially, is balance. If there's one word we need to guide everything we do, it needs to be balance. And built into this Hindu philosophy, built into this fundamental conception, is a balance between creation, maintenance, and destruction. We need all 3 happening. They're on equal footing, and they need to operate together in order for things to be maintained in a healthful, balanced way. And I observe, I feel at this moment in time and space that we are creation-obsessed. And there are a lot of reasons for it. The archetype of this moment feels like the entrepreneur. That is the archetype, the Steve Jobs, the Jeff Bezos, the someone who takes something from nothing and then creates something of a humongous magnitude that has huge impact on billions of human beings, Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. And, you know, part of our cultural mythology is also around money and bringing in a ton of money. And so this kind of creation Brahma phase, we are Brahma junkies in some ways at this point. And it seems like, looking around, that everyone is trying to find a way to get on that train. How to become a successful entrepreneur, how to create yourself and your identity. And consequently, an unintended byproduct of that is the disvaluation of those other 2 phases of maintenance and reorganization or destruction, so that new things can come into being. And there are consequences of that, because for most people, unless you're off-sourcing it, and I think there are downsides to off-sourcing our chores.
But outsourcing.
Outsourcing. It takes up a lot of our time. Laundry, grocery shopping, cooking, house maintenance.
Washing the dishes.
Getting your hair cut. Whatever, going to the bank. And if all we're valuing in our culture and society are the kind of achievements of creation, then there's no way we can value these activities, and then we can't be present for them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the you mean the Vishnu, the maintenance isn't valued right now.
Exactly.
The washing the dishes that you have to do 3 or 4 times a day just to maintain your life and maintain your house and clean dish to eat on at the next meal. It's not valued by society, so it feels like not worthless time. It's more like it's not time you can be proud of in our society, and that's too bad because it's something we have to do 4 times a day.
Yeah, or even more. And I think you see that also in other professional settings, and I am not an economist and I have no interest in being one. But part of my idea in the long run, if I had to think at a social economic level, is there are certainly clear-cut ways that make us happier and are integrated into how we operate at a kind of individual level. And ideally, at an economic social level, there would be incentives around supporting those habits and those ways of being in our own mind and our own way in life. The businesses and the professions, for instance, that are more, in quotes, maintenance, would be things like teachers and nurses and
sanitation
workers and things that are just essential to life. And yet the way our income structure is such is that those are very often limited income generating professions. Whereas the creation side, whether it's in financial markets, whether it's in technology, even within art and entertainment, these are the arenas that have huge financial payoffs.
Potentially.
And I think that's kind of circles back. It's reflective of a social value system that kind of seeps down the line into our own psyche that we overlay into how we perceive ourselves in our day-to-day life. And so these maintenance activities of laundry, of cooking, etc., it's very, very hard to find them valuable. And then there are consequences to that. So, I think a couple of the solutions here. What are the solutions?
Yeah, I
do think it's important not to outsource these types of activities.
Or not all of them.
I think there's an importance of self-responsibility in having the basics of your life be something that you're participating and involved in, understanding and doing. We make our children, even our daughter at 2, has to take her plate after eating it and bring it to the kitchen. And I think there's something fundamental to me about that, as opposed to letting her walk away from the table and have someone else take care of that. So that sense of self-responsibility, I think, is something that's important for us as individuals. I think, second, this idea of learning to hold your attention and presence all of the time within everyday activities, and these become really important ones for doing that.
Yeah, so can you go into that more? Like, ideally, what state should we be in, or what should we be thinking or feeling while we're washing the dishes or while we're grocery shopping?
This is a great question. You know, this is the kind of does enlightenment mean within that story? And it does become challenging to put into words, and it's part of the power of meditation as a technique and practice, is that when you are on the mat with your eyes closed and doing some kind of meditation technique, you are in a different observational position to what's happening in your mind. And with some time and practice, all of those day-to-day thoughts can begin to settle down. And what's revealed underneath is sometimes a silence and a presence, but more of a kind of subtlety. There's a subtlety and a sensitivity where you can feel the space around you, things are a little bit clearer and moving more slowly, and ultimately your attention is not aiming to jump away from the moment to somewhere else. That you can imagine like a stone that's just stably place somewhere is how your attention is in relation to your present moment and what you're doing.
Yeah, when I'm in Shavasana, I don't want to leave it. I don't want to be or go anywhere else.
Yeah, and part of the assumption for a lot of people is the reason that's happening is because you're doing nothing. That because your body is still and your mind is not engaged with some activity, then you can naturally stabilize yourself in that space. Number one, we know that's not true because for a lot of people, even though their body is still and they're not engaged in activity, for a lot of people that's a very intense, uncomfortable moment. That their minds are actually extremely active and it takes a lot of self-discipline and containment not to move. It can be very uncomfortable for people. But on the other hand, what you aim to find is that you've dialed your mind down when you can successfully be in Shavasana to this place of stability. But that's the state of your mind. It's intrinsically. It's not because it's in a certain condition. And so the real purpose of being in that state is to be able to then work your way back out into chopping wood and carrying water and maintain that intrinsic stability in action, in motion.
Right.
And that is really at a fundamental level about having your attention grounded in the present moment without trying to jump somewhere else. And that has a range of subtle implications to it that are hard to put into words about sensitivity, about awareness, about what's motivating you, about what you want and what you don't want, that all become these repercussions when your mind is in that kind of state. And these, in quotes, mundane activities, these day-to-day chores, are incredible opportunities for developing that capacity, because at a certain level, our goal of enlightenment is not just in mundane chores, but in every moment you have that quality.
Mm-hmm.
In these creative phases and when hard things are happening. But these chore activities that we do every day and take up a lot of our time are the best first stepping ground to developing that state of consciousness. It's very, very hard at higher stakes moments, but when you're making your bed and when you're cooking and when you're taking a shower, these become your step-ups from Shavasana.
Mm. So like washing the dishes is a nice moment to keep washing the dishes, but take a deep breath and just try to sink back into that Shavasana state.
Exactly. And we will ideally want to do it the other way. So classically what you're doing in yoga and meditation, and this is not a fixed position, but the reason around it is you start in the morning. You wake up in the morning and your mind is, let's call it, untrained. So what do you do with it? You sit down and you do exercise and you meditate and you tighten the screws and you put yourself within that state, that, in quotes, enlightened state, or as close to it as you can. Is that an end to itself? In some ways it is. To sit in that experience is an end to itself. But the next step, the implied requirement, is to then get up and go do what you need to do during your day and try and carry that with you. My day after meditation in the morning starts with feeding my children and cooking for them. So it's fresh on my mind, for me personally, every day, coming up and the first thing is putting on an apron and starting to cook some food, intentionally trying to carry that state while cooking in the morning.
Yeah.
And cleaning. So rather than this kind of sinking back down into a state, you're actually just trying to sustain yourself, to maintain yourself, to Vishnu yourself into a state that you've already established in another way.
This is all, of course, assuming that we all have the morning practice that you do, which is getting up and doing a meditation practice that starts your day off in that state. So that's pretty important, I guess.
Everything is about values and choices, and I do not pretend and never will to have a monopoly on how one should live and what we should do. But my value system, and I didn't make it up, is about existing in a particular state of mind as consistently as possible.
Right. That
in
is
every
the yogic
moment.
Philosophy. And that's why all, even all the different branches of yoga really suggest starting your day with a morning yoga practice so that you can start your day in that mental state, and then hopefully that mental state will last through the morning, or hopefully the morning and afternoon, or hopefully all through the night.
And it goes back to our last conversation, which is, you know, how it's not about meditation. It's about what is your state of mind. And there are various ways in order to put your mind in a certain kind of state. Meditation is a classical one. It's one that works very, very well for me. But one way or another, we wake up in the morning and we have a set number of hours of day where we need to apply our mind and be in a certain state. So given my value system, your first move of the day needs to be establishing that mind state in whatever way is effective for you. The remainder of the day is figuring out how to carry that through as consistently as possible. And along the way, a chunk of that time is being spent doing chores or mundane activities. And if we don't value them, then there is no way to bring that kind of attention to it. Because one of the defining features is not trying to jump to some other space and time. So if you don't value this, it means you value something else more, and your mind cannot be contained here. It's impossible. So I think one of the kind of concrete suggestions for doing this is an idea I call micro-achievements. Is this idea that when we accomplish something, finally folding all the laundry or cleaning up all the dishes or finishing a meal, to pause and acknowledge that you've accomplished something. There was a period of time before I thought in micro-achievements where, you know, again, we have young children. Our day starts early.
Very early.
And, you know, by 9 o'clock, I've exercised, done yoga and meditation, cooked a meal for 3 people, cleaned it up, prepared lunch, prepared dinner, done the dishes, made the bed. You know, by 9 o'clock, there's a lot that's been done. And there was a long period of time for me where by 9 o'clock, I just discounted that as if my day started when my work day started, or something that was a more Brahma creation phase started. And all of this stuff was just hoops that I needed to jump through
to get to
9 a.m. But I began realizing just how much time and energy was going into that and happening every morning, and I was rushing through that in order to get to some other point that counted, that I valued. And yet so much time, energy, and attention were going there. And as soon as I started stopping and being like, this is something that has to happen every morning, and I'm engaged with it now, and it has a value. These children need to be fed. My body needs to be fed. These dishes need to be cleaned. This bed needs to be made. I'm doing that, and I'm accomplishing it by doing it. And pause and
celebrate the Vishnu.
Celebrate the Vishnu and acknowledge the micro achievement of achieving, of getting those things done, and including that into the things that I accomplish in any given day. It radically changed how I was spending that time. And whether you value it or not, the very fact of the matter is that for most of us, and I would say for everyone at some level, there's some equivalent, even if you don't do your own laundry, there's something in your life you're doing that's in that Vishnu maintenance category. It takes up a tremendous amount of our time. And so at a basically practical level, if we can't honor and own that, we are simply dismissing and not present for, and not enjoying, and not valuing what is taking up swaths and swaths of our time. What was 4 or 5 hours that got me to 9 a.m. was literally hoops that didn't count in my life until I started changing my way of thinking around this. And that's crazy, because I am alive in that moment, and that is part of my life on equal footing as whatever other Brahma creation activities happen.
So step one is value the Vishnu as much as you value the Brahma. And step two is, in addition to valuing those maintenance tasks, use them as a beautiful time to let your meditative state rise up and come through into your day. Because it's not just valuing it, it's also utilizing that time. Because, you know, we can go on autopilot when we're making the bed or washing the dishes. But I think what you're suggesting, if I'm hearing you right, is don't just go on autopilot. Try to bring back that state that you were in when you were on the yoga mat, whatever that last time you were on the mat was, or the meditation mat. Use that making of the bedtime to take a deep breath and let that state permeate you for a moment so that you can return to it. I mean, ideally it never leaves you, but if it does, if it's left you since the time you left your meditation mat, use that washing dishes or making the bedtime as a moment to let it return to you. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think it's exactly right. There are a lot of layers to it, and it begins with valuing it. It's beginning to recognize it as something that needs to be done and is valuable use of time. And then once you can bring value to it, then part of that value is this opportunity of applying a state of mind in this task as one of the best, probably the best stepping stone from the mat to integrating into your real life. And then honing that through this micro achievement acknowledgement that when you're done with it, celebrate it, pause, and see it as something that was a valuable use of time that you accomplished, as opposed to something you needed to rush through to get to something that was more valuable. That is the illusion. There is nothing more valuable. From this spiritual point of view, what that story is about is there is nothing more or less valuable. That is an illusion of the human mind. The Jeff Bezos story, the Steve Jobs, not to disvalue what they do, not at all. Not at all. It's not a disvaluation of anybody. It's just recognizing that we create this hierarchy of values of better and worse ways of spending time, and that is an illusion and ends up throwing all of us off. The real value from a spiritual point of view is what is the quality of your attention, your mind, and your consciousness as you are engaging in whatever it is you're doing.
Are you in an enlightened state right now? Whether you're chopping wood, carrying water, or launching the new iPhone, right? What state are you in?
Exactly. So, to bring it to a close here, there is no way around chopping wood and carrying water. The modern equivalents are laundry, cooking, grocery shopping, making the bed, showering, etc. They take up a tremendous part of our life. And if we can't own that time, then we are missing a lot of our life. And there is a tremendous amount of good reason to own that time in our life. They are the best opportunities to bring presence to yourself. And learning how to find presence in these moments becomes the equalizer for integrating presence and mindfulness into your whole life. Thanks for joining us today, and I hope you tune in next time. And I hope what we talk about here is relevant and that you can find a way to integrate it into your life.